The Lieutenant Governor, of course, has left on the trade mission to South Korea and to China this morning. Yesterday, I was able to meet with the departments and agencies at our State Emergency Operations Center concerning the rising floodwaters in western Iowa. And this is really a great coordinated effort. It continues to be a very serious situation. It's important for residents along the Missouri River to continually monitor the situation. The flooding has resulted due to large amounts of rain and snow in the Missouri River Basin, and of course the Corps of Engineers has dramatically increased the outflow from the dams that are upstream. This is going to result in large areas of flooding in South Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska, and Missouri. The Iowa Homeland Security and Emergency Management Division, along with other state and federal agencies, are working closely with local emergency management to prepare communities for potential impacts. Last week I was up in Sioux City. Later today I'm also going to be in Council Bluffs. But Brigadier General Derek Hill is in charge of our Homeland Security Emergency Management, and he's going to give us a little more details on the situation. Derek, and then we'll answer questions on the flood.
Good morning. First, I'll update you on the levee near Hamburg in Fremont County. Sunday morning, a leak, or what we call a boil, was discovered in a federal levee about 5.5 miles southwest of Hamburg. State of Iowa responded by sending an Iowa National Guard helicopter to assist local officials and the Army Corps of Engineers by placing large sandbags on that levee. The Iowa National Guard worked up until dark last night while it was still safe to perform the operations. Corps is working with local officials on defensive measures, including building a secondary retaining wall or levee or berm closer to the city. It will probably be a semi-shaped wall of earth that will help protect the city. Residents on the south side of Hamburg were asked to evacuate. Gavin's Point, which is the first dam north of Iowa in South Dakota, has exponentially increased its outflow. Several days ago, they were at 69,000 cubic feet per second of release. Today, they were in the neighborhood of 100 to 110,000 cubic feet per thousand cubic feet per second, and by the 14th, they will be at 150,000 cubic feet per second, which the Corps is telling us they will hold that release until sometime in August. This means river levels will probably be elevated all the way through August. People could be displaced from their homes for several weeks. Although the full impact of the increased flow is not known, we do know from looking at the Corps' inundation maps that on the Iowa side, the Missouri River could flood its banks anywhere from a few hundred feet to possibly as much as 2 miles into the state. With that said, please be aware that the depth of the flood may vary from several inches to a few feet. It really depends on where you are. Iowa Homeland Security and Emergency Management has been working closely with local emergency managers in all counties affected, Fremont, Harrison, Mills, Monona, Pottawatomie, and Woodbury, to help them prepare their communities and citizens as best they can. We're working with them to ensure critical infrastructure such as roads, water, treatment plants, and sewage treatment plants are protected and have provided sandbags, equipment, technical assistance to build berms and other protective structures and to strengthen existing levees. We're also working in close coordination with Army Corps of Engineers, monitoring the outflow at Gavin's Point, and asking, and we are receiving technical assistance and other assistance from the Corps of Engineers. The Omaha District of the Army Corps of Engineers has inundation maps that show the areas that are subject to being flooded. Those maps are on its website for the public to go take a look at. Local emergency management is providing information and working with its citizens right now. The citizens out there can check their local television and radio stations. Several of the counties have set up Facebook and web pages, and many communities are already holding public meetings and discussing what their actions are going to be. Residents along the river can call 211 or the Iowa Concern Hotline at 1-800-447-1985 for more information. This is obviously a very serious situation. Residents along the Missouri River need to be preparing now. First and most importantly, they need to find out if they're in their area of potential flooding. As I said, they can go to the Omaha District's webpage. Some residents can make a determination that they need to go ahead and move out of their home. If so, we ask that they look around in their yard, or if they're on a farmland, the farmland, move those items out that will potentially be floating down river in the flood, including probably taking the necessary action to feather strap down propane tanks that difficult to move but will be lifted off the foundation and can potentially be swept away by the flood. Others need to determine if there's a way to protect their home if they're in an area that will not be so deep that they immediately have to move away. Maybe they have a way to protect their home. Others that are on the dry side of a levee need to be prepared in the event of a levee failure or a levee topping. Citizens can prepare for flooding by having an evacuation plan, have an emergency supply kit ready to go, and be thinking about their family needs. If they have someone that has medical needs or an elderly person that has special needs that they know they need to be taking medicines and equipment with them, they're going to be displaced for quite a period of time potentially, or to be thinking about taking money with them, copies of important documents such as driver's license, insurance policies, things of that nature, first aid and personal hygiene items. Our websites that are out there that have all this information on that are www.bereadyiowa.org and www.iowahomelandsecurity.org. Thank you.
Questions on the flood situation on the Missouri River?
Yes, ma'am. Several weeks, couple of months.
It also depends on how much rain occurs during this time and all of that sort of situation in terms of, you know, the river. So I'm not sure you can just absolutely with certainty predict the length that it's going to be. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that they're saying it's going to be this long a period of time, but this is a pretty unusual situation. This is the worst flooding that I can remember on the Missouri River.
Where are the displaced being instructed to go?
Right now, there's an emergency shelter set up in outside of Hamburg in Sydney, I believe it is, that the Red Cross set up for those that have been advised to evacuate out of Hamburg. As of last night, the last I heard, nobody had checked into that shelter. Several people are moving towards relatives and families and friends. We also have a group that's studying the issue right now for long-term housing needs.
That's happened in Modale as well, right, Margaret? That's Margaret's hometown. This is not unusual. We've seen this in other cases where people are displaced. A lot of times they stay with family or friends rather than going to a shelter, but their shelters are being made available.
We've given some levee measurements, 69,000 cubic feet, 110, 150. What's the baseline for that? If it was open on like a normal day, would that be like 10 cubic feet or?
Baseline for that normally open up is around 60 or 65,000. Yeah, that's why Gavin's had been running for several weeks. I'm not sure which problem you're talking about, ma'am. I'm sorry.
You mean Hamburg?
In Hamburg.
I know that yesterday afternoon that we were down there working along with the Corps and county officials trying to beef up the levee. Yeah.
Is that still going on?
I haven't had a report this morning. I'm sorry.
It's likely that it will be. There's some very low areas south of Council Bluffs where the DOT thinks I-29 will need to be closed. But it's not closed as of now, but it's certainly a prospect that we will see it closed.
Is there some way to deal with that with the traffic that would normally be carried on
Right, there will be detours. You know, I think Highway 71 is probably the logical detour. The DOT has contingency plans. They already have, and we got a report yesterday when we had the meeting on that, and they do have plans. And the other thing I think they've told people is, you know, in terms of waiting to the last minute, if you're going to evacuate, obviously you got to consider whether the roads are going to be open as well. Right. Well, I don't know how much more specific we can be than that. I can say I've been to Hamburg when they've had floods before, but it's primarily been the Nishnabotna River, not the Missouri River. So the flooding when I was governor before, back in the 80s and 90s, was primarily caused by the Nishnabotna, not by the Missouri River. This time it's the Missouri River, not the Nishnabotna, that's the problem. And the breach is actually south of Hamburg, but the water backs up, but it's a very low area there.
It's the forecast is for very hot weather up into the 90s for much of the week. How does that complicate flood rescue efforts, or what precautions are you taking because of the weather? It's going to be so hot.
We're advising everybody to be drinking water. Yeah, you're going to be outside working, to be like anywhere else, performing labor outside under hot, humid conditions. But hot weather, hot, dry weather is in our favor.
Precautions for livestock, other animals. We know that there were, for example, the flood of nights, or the
right. Yes, the agriculture people are involved in that. They made a report at the emergency meeting we had yesterday, and they've been, I think, notifying people who have livestock to look at possibly moving them to higher ground if they're in a flood, in an area that's likely to flood. No, I don't know that they have a specific count, but they do know where there are feedlots and where there are livestock operations, and the Department of Agriculture is working closely with them.
Do you have a schedule of updates or information updates for people who live out in these areas? Are you doing it like daily, monthly, weekly, or I guess not monthly?
Yes, we're getting into a rhythm where we will be having periodic updates. I'm not sure if that's going to be we're updating as things occur naturally, but probably we'll be going to a daily press conference or a daily telephone call. People can call in, the press can call in and get daily information as to what's happening that day. We did that yesterday afternoon.
Governor, you're scheduled to go out on a 43C
right.
tour. How will that be impacted by this event at all?
Well, in fact, you know, I'm intending to go to Council Bluffs today. In fact, I've got a statement I want once we're going to go into that next. But let me just say that I do intend to stay in touch. I've got a cell phone on me, and I will be in touch with Homeland Security Emergency Management at all times while I'm on the road and traveling around the state. And in fact, I will be making a statement in Council Bluffs. You know, one of the concerns that in Council Bluffs is it is protected by a levee, but there's concern about you know, reinforcing that levee and making sure that levee holds. So that's certainly a concern in that community, and that's a community where there's a large number of citizens that live in an area that is protected by the levee. Unless there are further questions on this, let me talk about the whole budget situation in our 43 city tour. Okay,
just one more
question.
For,
yep.
For General Hill.
Yep.
Our advice and the local emergency managers, they are in charge of their operations. They're planning for contingencies. In case something does not go the way it's supposed to, they've got contingency plans in place. You know, you plan for the worst and hope for the best.
Would you say the danger is just pretty much even all up and down the river?
No, it's not even. It's worse in some places than others. And we went through this yesterday, county by county, and they had an assessment of where the potential danger. So they're really trying to set priorities. And I will say, I was really impressed seeing the Emergency Operations Center up there in Woodbury County. I've known Gary Brown since the crash of Flight 232, and he's got a great team. It's city and county and people, local people working together. And so I think, you know, I think they're doing really well, and I think each of the counties is working diligently to try to be as well prepared as possible. Great cooperation from the private sector. Mid-America Energy, they have significant power plants both in south of Sioux City and also in the Council Bluffs area, and they've done a lot of preparation and a lot of work there. We've also provided them with some important items that they needed to try to build up around their power plants, hopefully to avoid flooding of those plants as well. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Derek. Well, as you know, today I am embarking on a 43-city tour to share with Iowans the agreed-upon budget that we've worked out with the House of Representatives, with House and Senate Republicans. And we're calling this the Working Together for Iowa's Future Tour because we believe that Senate Democrats need to work with us as well and show that we're all serious about moving Iowa forward and resolving the budget impasse that's gone on for the last several weeks. There's not been much activity in the legislature for the last 5 weeks. I canceled my trade mission so I could be available, not only to meet with the public, but also to meet with legislators as necessary and to resolve the budget impasse. Still, Senate Democrats have not come up with any counterproposal. We felt it was necessary to fulfill the commitment we made to the people of Iowa to restore sound budgeting principles, and the budget we have meets those sound budgeting principles, and we have then worked out our differences between between the Republicans and the governor's office, and we've reached out to the Democrats, and we've tried to incorporate some of the areas of concern they have. The budget that's being proposed makes a good faith effort to meet some of their priorities. For instance, it does provide for additional 2% allowable growth in the second year, and that's on top of the $215 million that we put in this year's budget that fully funds the school aid formula. So that's $215 million more for this coming fiscal year than was received last year, and then on top of that, another $65 million to provide for 2% allowable growth in the second year. We also continue the preschool program, and we offer about a $10 million increase in funding for community colleges over what the House had approved previously. I have to believe that there's no really legitimate reason for Democrats not to see this as a conciliatory effort to work out the differences and work with us to get this job done. This budget acknowledges that Iowa does have an ending balance at the end of this fiscal year, but that money is committed to meet the obligations we have in subsequent years. So we do not have a surplus, but we do have a sustainable budget, something that we've not had in this state for the last several years. We're spending less than we're taking in. We're abiding by the Iowa Taxpayers Association sound budgeting principles, and we meet our obligations and do it in a fiscally responsible way. We want to make sure that we end this session without the budget gimmicks that have occurred in recent years, using one-time money for ongoing expenses, underfunding entitlement programs, and other things that just creates a budget cliff and problems for the subsequent year. In fact, it is a two-year budget for the most part. I think 96% of the second year of budget is provided for. So we think that makes a lot of sense. It gives us the continuity and stability that we need for the future. It also addresses the property tax issue, and I think it's critically important that that be addressed, because failing to act would be a massive property tax increase on all classes of property because of the impact of the high commodity prices, with the five-year rolling average on commodity prices, and the fact that residential and agriculture are tied together. It's not all that I wanted to get accomplished in this session. It is truly a compromise, but it will get where we need to get in terms of reducing the commercial property tax from 100% to 60%, but it'll take 8 years instead of 6 years. I think accommodates some of the concerns that have been expressed by people in local government and by some of the Senate Democrats. So truly, I believe that this is a compromise, that it is designed to accomplish the goals that we have of stability and predictability and sustainability and funding, and still meets the concerns in terms of providing more money for education than was in the previous House passed budget. So I intend to go out and meet with people all over the state of Iowa and share with them my commitment and the commitment that Republicans in both the House and the Senate have made to work to resolve this in a way that positions Iowa for growth and jobs in the future. Yes?
Why are you going out and talking to the people? Shouldn't you be talking to Senate Democrats?
Well, I learned a long time ago the way you accomplish things is to the legislative body generally doesn't react to somebody trying to twist their arm. They react to their constituents and to the interest and the concerns of the constituents. And so the best thing you can do as governor is to work with the people and have the people of Iowa talk to their legislators. And I learned that a long time ago. When I was in the legislature, they used to talk about being called down to the governor's office, being taken to the woodshed as kind of a negative thing. And so I learned that some of the best ways a governor can really accomplish things is to go directly to the people of Iowa and gain the support of the people of Iowa and share with the people and answer their questions, and then with their help convince the legislators there's a need for action. Well, I'm glad they're back in town. I know the House is going to be meeting an Appropriations Committee and Ways and Means Committee today to move forward on the budget. I think it's a little late to be holding budget hearings. Those things usually are done in January and February, and now is the time for action. The fiscal year ends at the end of June. We still have time, but it's time to get serious, and that's the reason why we're going on the road to share with Iowans the compromises that have been worked out with the Republicans in the House and Senate, and the need for the Democrats to join with us in approving this budget.
So have Democrats heretofore been unserious?
Well, we've had several discussions, and when I say we, I guess I would say my chief of staff, Jeff Boink, and Dave Roeder have met with the Senate Democrats and with Mike Gronstall on a number of occasions, and we have put together our plan and worked it out with the House and then asked for a counterproposal. And in many instances, we were given the impression we would receive a counterproposal, but never have. And we just don't have time to continue to wait and wait and wait. And so that's the reason why the decision was made to move forward, but to try to accommodate some of the concerns they've expressed publicly in the proposal that we put together. No, I don't. I'm not concerned about that. I mean, historically, we've handled the budget in several bills, but there have been years when they have done comprehensive bills like this before. But these things have been discussed and debated throughout the session, so they're not new, and there should be adequate time for them to be discussed and debated. Instead of doing it in several separate bills, they're going to do it in one comprehensive bill. But I think that it's not like these are new topics. There's been a lot of discussion about it, but we finally reached the point now where it's critically important that action be taken and the budget issues between the House and the Senate be resolved, and resolved in a way that is sustainable for the long term.
If you don't have agreement on the 30th, will you have this, will you entertain the possibility of a continuing resolution like Congress has done?
I don't think that's necessary. We've never done that in Iowa. There's all the reasons in the world to resolve this and to get it done now. I think by the House moving forward, having Appropriations Committee meet today, you know, this is the 6th of June. There's still plenty of time to get it done.
Would you comment on bullet funding key areas of state government in fiscal year 13, but then funding the rest at 85% of its fiscal 12 level?
Well, this is part of the compromise that worked out. You know, we wanted a two-year budget and fully funding them for both fiscal years, but this is an effort to try to accommodate the concerns that have been expressed in the legislature on the second-year budget.
Are you guaranteeing that you'll sign this agreement, that this won't be a bait and switch where they send you something and then pieces get vetoed out of it?
Well, first of all, we are directly involved in the negotiations on this. And I would make it very clear. We made it clear to them before when they passed appropriation bills that weren't acceptable, that they weren't acceptable. We will tell people if there are areas that are not acceptable. So there'd be no surprises from the governor's office. We've been very open and honest from the very beginning and said we want to restore honest budgeting. We want to make sure that we're spending less than we're taking in. We want to fully fund entitlement programs and not push the burden into previous years. We don't want to use one-time money for ongoing expenses. All of those things, we've been very clear and consistent, and we've insisted that this budget needs to meet those requirements. But within those requirements, there's this ability to reach some compromise, and that's been our, you know, that's the way we've worked all the way through the process, and that's the way we can continue to do it. No, there was.
They say they were blindsided by it.
No, they weren't. And you know, let's not. This is all politics, but let me just say this. We made it clear, myself, Jeff Boink, Dave Roeder, what wasn't acceptable. And we made it clear that we're willing to look at and discuss different things, but we've also made it clear what wasn't acceptable. And that was made abundantly clear.
Final question.
Well, in the past, maybe that's worked out. But in this session, that hasn't worked. There's been many of those discussions over the last several weeks with Jeff Boink and Dave Roeder representing the governor's office, working with the House and with Senator Gronstall. And I don't know how much detail, and I want to be fair to everybody in this process, but in many cases, so we put together what we said is acceptable, and we asked Senator Gronstall for a counter proposal, but in a number of instances he indicated he was willing to do that, but then after meeting with either his staff or going to caucus, he didn't have the authority to do that. So that's the reason why we've gone this route of working something out, trying to accommodate some of the concerns and moving this process forward, because those private discussions which have gone on for weeks and weeks and weeks haven't gotten us the result that we hoped they would get.
Just one thing. Is there any way that you can fund education at 2% for two consecutive years? That seems to be the big sticker.
Well, this year is already basically decided. You know, the school districts have already put their budgets together, decided what teachers they're going to hire and that sort of stuff. So this year's budget is pretty well and remember, we provided $215 million more than they got last year because we are fully funding the formula. Now, the 2% is in the next year. And historically, we've made those decisions in advance. The reason why this year's budget wasn't decided is because last year, the Democratic legislature and Governor Culver decided not to make that decision because they had the state budget so messed up. So we're in the process of getting it back in order, and one of the first things was for the state to meet its obligations, fully funding the school aid formula, and I promise schools there will stability and predictability. There will not be an across-the-board cut. There are not going to be these kind of surprises, but it is an austere budget. We recognize that, and we feel we can accommodate the 2% in the second year of the biennium, and so we've done that.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.